Hello, welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One.
After an unusual Formula One season to date, we're getting into the new part of the calendar, starting off with the Nürburgring this weekend. Welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. I'm your host, Will, and I'm delighted to be joined by the editor-in-chief of Grand Prix 24/7, Paul Velasco. Paul, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. Really looking forward to the weekend. It's amazing when you get used to these back-to-back races, you twiddle your thumbs on weekends when there's no Grand Prix. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's amazing how used to just races every weekend I become, and then kind of getting used to not having that on. But I'm really excited about the stretch of races we've got coming up, and the Nürburgring is definitely no exception to that. A track that we haven't raced at since 2013 in Formula One, and actually never raced at in the hybrid era. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how, firstly, the cars handle the circuit, how the drivers adapt, and to see kind of whether there's anything, you know, strange or interesting that happens with the running order, because I think that midfield battle is so tight that we could see some really surprise results, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's sad that that's the first thing we have to talk about is the midfield battle, because that's all there really is. You know, because Mercedes are just way up the order. I think Red Bull, well, let's put Max rather than Red Bull. Max with Red Bull are next up. And yeah, we're talking about a midfield battle, and honestly, that doesn't really motivate me a hell of a lot. Yeah, Renault are good there and all that. I'd really like to see the front battle, but for the benefit of the show, I will say that, yeah, it's interesting what can happen there. I think there's a second separating, you know, fourth from 18th or something. So yeah, anything can happen on that level, and I'm curious to see how Renault go, because I really believe Renault are going to power Red Bull if Red Bull cannot find an alternative. And if they continue improving, Max might actually be rubbing his hands in glee. So yeah, I'm kind of just curious if they can keep that momentum going.
Yeah, you make a good point there. Unfortunately, this season, the Mercedes dominance has been at such a level that it is really difficult to envisage too much of a battle at the front. Obviously, we have the inter-team battle between Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas, and Bottas obviously did make some progress in that sense at the Russian Grand Prix, but obviously you can't ignore the circumstances in which he did that with Hamilton picking up the penalty. So I do think that beyond the two of them, and that will likely be a battle that's decided in qualifying, it really is about looking at the midfield. I do think that the fact that we haven't raced here since 2013 is a really interesting factor. As you say, I think Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel are the only drivers on the current grid to have won at the Nürburgring. And considering the number of young drivers we have here, it's going to be a lot of drivers racing here for the very first time, at least in Formula One. There are some kind of interesting parts about this track. The opening corner is a very deep one that can catch some people out. I think Lewis Hamilton came to woe there in 2009, and I'd be very interested. It's obviously got some very fast corners, a couple of long straights towards the end of the track. But how do you think these modern cars will kind of deal with the challenge of the Nürburgring?
Yeah, apart from the hairpin, I think pretty much like any other track. Look, I think we got to use Mugello as the sort of barometer. You know, Formula One had never raced there, and it provided a fantastic race. There was carnage, if you recall, because it was a very it was a track that just punished mistakes. I think Nürburgring is slightly different. It's not as menacing, I would say, and they have a lot of racing there. So, yeah, I'm just curious to see how modern Formula One cars will go there compared to their predecessors. And I think that will also be provide us a nice benchmark, provided the weather stays good, because, you know, if it rains all weekend, then all stats go out the window.
Yeah, and as you say with that point, obviously we had a rather thrilling German Grand Prix at Hockenheim last year, and that was largely caused because of the rain and the kind of constantly changing conditions that the drivers had to work against. And I know that we're kind of getting into, we're in October now, and we still have plenty of races to complete before the end of the season. So I think, as we mentioned, you know, we are despairing slightly of the lack of a battle at the front. If we are going to get a winner outside Mercedes, and potentially Max Verstappen kind of can come into that debate, obviously he won at Hockenheimring last year. Do you think that if it's wet, do you think that gives more chance we'll see a surprise winner?
Indeed. I mean, you know, there's always that possibility with the wet. I think the wet is a big leveler. I still think the cream will rise to the top. But yeah, you know, I think this time of the year, that is definitely a factor. I mean, I'm not banking on it, but definitely it will play. And I think, you know, let's be honest, the guy who always shines when it's adverse conditions and is Max. So if he doesn't bin it, he wins it. So that's the philosophy he drives to, and that's why I think he's loved by so many people. So if the weather does turn, then it all counts against Mercedes, because Mercedes arrived there as way favourites. Anything less than a 1-2 in quali and racing would say is a failure, because that car is so superior. And the only thing is we can hope for, really, and I don't mean to be like, you know, doom and gloom, but I'm not trying to sell Formula One. I'm in Formula One for the long term. But as a proper fan, I'm just saying, yeah, it's so predictable at the moment. You know, it's Mercedes 1-2, or they shoot themselves in the foot, and that's it. You know, so I'm hoping there could be a surprise, and I'm actually going to throw one out there. I think Racing Point are due a surprise, and because that car is very, very good. And I think if it's a race of attrition, I think Sergio has got a really good chance of you know, finishing his tenure there with a win. I've got the feeling that Racing Point are going to click at some point between now and the end of the season, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's in Germany.
Yeah, I think you might be onto a good point there. I feel slightly underwhelmed with what I've seen from Racing Point this season in terms of turning that pace into good results. You know, only picking up the one podium so far with Lance Stroll at Monza, and even then you could probably argue that that was potentially a win thrown away. So they're definitely one that I want to see more of. As much as, you know, Perez has still had the edge on Stroll in qualifying, this has been far from a vintage Sergio Perez performance this season. And while Stroll has made strides and certainly improved, he's still not quite getting the absolute maximum out of that car at every track. So I'd definitely like to see more from them. And I think that this, you know, this strikes me as a track that would suit the Mercedes. So hopefully we'll see Racing Point potentially, I guess, just fulfilling that potential, because I don't think they've quite done that this season. And just on the issue of potentially a surprise result, obviously, if anyone can remember back as far as 2007, we had absolutely torrential rain, and that led to some very entertaining racing with Marcus Winkelhock actually leading the Grand Prix after one lap in his only ever Grand Prix in I think it was a Spyker, and Lewis Hamilton, Jenson Button all kind of being collected at the same spot. So if we get anything like that, it will certainly be an entertaining race. Well, looking at the Nürburgring specifically, should we just key in on a couple of drivers who I'm sure there'll be plenty of interest in around? And certainly the two Ferrari drivers are some of those. Sebastian Vettel, coming to Germany, obviously kind of his home race. He's had an incredibly difficult season so far. He's obviously got this Aston Martin deal for next season. But firstly, just on Seb, Paul, how do you, you know, what is there to gain for him at this Grand Prix and for the rest of the season? Because, you know, I think we all understand the circumstances are difficult, but this really isn't doing his kind of reputation and legacy any good.
Yeah, Seb, I must say, I just listened to a Beyond the Grid podcast with him, which I recommend everyone listens to. Really, the guy is such a sweetheart. I mean, you know, he's really, he speaks so well. He's so passionate. You can't just but love the guy, you know. So I feel a bit jaded in terms of, well, when I say jaded, I feel a bit, I don't want to talk bad about him. He's just such a great guy. He's a fantastic driver. And yes, I do believe that he makes a lot of mistakes when he shouldn't be making mistakes. But, you know, having listened to that podcast and listening to him speak, and you just realize, look, the guy's very passionate. He realizes it was mission unaccomplished at Ferrari, and he's moving on. And I think he's just going to take every race as it comes. I think the car is really horrendous and it's going to do him no favors. And honestly, if I had a message for him, I'd just say, hey, Seb, just don't overdo it. Don't overdrive it. Don't do anything stupid. Just finish the season, park the Ferrari, give them the keys and say, hasta la vista and ragazzi, whatever, you know, grazie ragazzi, and move on. Because honestly, I don't like to see him crashing. I don't like to see him making these mistakes. And I think it's because he's just driving too hard. And Seb, you got to give him a really good car. If you give him a good car, he's great. You give him a bad car, he's not so good.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can't help but like Seb and warm to him. And obviously, I think that his issue is potentially he just isn't as adaptable a driver as the likes of a Hamilton or a Verstappen. And potentially this season has shown, or even as adaptable as someone like Charles Leclerc. Because Leclerc, you know, and it's been evident at times just how slow that Ferrari is. Especially, I think Mugello was probably the worst example where he started so high up on the grid and just went backwards in the race. And it clearly doesn't have the pace of a lot of the even midfield rivals. But Leclerc has been able to kind of drag performance out of that car in a way that Vettel just hasn't. I do think their personal circumstances have something to do with that. Leclerc has everything to prove still. Whereas, you know, Vettel is a four-time world champion who knows that he's going to a different team at the end of the season. But Paul, how impressed have you been with Charles Leclerc, and just do you think that there's any way back for Ferrari this season or even next season, or do you think this is kind of like a fundamental rebuild that team needs to go through?
I think everyone has an opinion about what's good for Ferrari. I would say yes. I think that there has to be a major reshuffle. My opinion is I think Binotto is a fine guy and all that, but I just think he needs someone in his corner. John Alkin and Louis Camilleri, they're too invisible. They need a Luca de Montezemolo style guy in Binotto's corner. You need someone protecting Binotto. You know, you need someone, let Binotto run the back end of the team, and let, you know, you need someone charismatic, someone, I don't know, on a shudder to say, but a Flavio style guy, but not Flavio, but someone with charisma. Listen, a Christian Horner, someone like that. You need someone to sort of be the buffer between the bullshit, which is us, the media, and all that, and let Binotto focus on the team and the racing. I think he spread himself too far, and until they resolve that issue of staffing and all that, I don't think he can manage on his own. So, and still oversee the car. So, is this thing going to? They say 2 years, but you know, when they say 2 years, based on what? You know, it's just to pacify who? Because based on what about in those other 2 years? Are their competition going to sit still? No, they're not. You know what I mean? So maybe someone else gets a lot better than them. So I just think I'm stunned that they're so on the back foot, which means they were doing something not nice with the engine, and we kind of all know why they're here now. So. Yeah, I don't know what to say about Ferrari. I just say it's Charles Leclerc he's amazing. I mean, he takes that rubbish car and he rings it by its neck.
Yeah, you raised some very good points there. I really enjoy your use of the expression bullshit buffer. And I think that's certainly something that Christian Horner kind of revels in. You know, he loves playing the press game. He loves, you know, slighting other drivers and bigging up his own guys. And that kind of allows the people behind the scenes like Adrian Newey and kind of the rest of their team to get to work on the technical side. And I think it's a similar situation with Toto at Mercedes, and then someone like Zak Brown at McLaren. And I do get the feeling that, you know, Ferrari maybe need someone like even like a Riva Bene, who wasn't necessarily involved on the technical side to the same extent, but you know, who could kind of front up in the media, and he had that kind of I guess that kind of like marketing savvy that I don't think Binotto has. And I do think that there's potential scope there for an appointment, or just kind of a structural kind of restructuring within the team. And the other point you say about this 2 years thing, I think that you're completely right. That's just trying to kind of satiate the people who want him gone, because you know there are very limited things that you can do to really upgrade your engine with the token system. Every team only has 2 tokens to make upgrades during the off season. So, as you say, Mercedes going to push again. Renault are going to push again. You know, whatever happens with Red Bull and potentially, you know, Honda, potentially they could be pushing again. So, you know, it's not a kind of standing. You know, everyone else isn't standing still. They're moving forward as well. So, you know, for Ferrari just to say it'll take 2 years, I think even that could be ambitious given, you know, the rate of progression in Formula One. And you know, me and you were talking off airport before we started this, and you were just talking about the kind of the speeds that these cars are doing this season in comparison to even last year. And you know, it seems like we're getting a new lap record at almost every circuit now. So, you know, no one will stand still and let Ferrari back into the fold and let them be competitive again. So there definitely needs to be some work done there behind the scenes. Moving on, another kind of Ferrari adjacent talking point is that you know, there's been some speculation that Ferrari junior driver Mick Schumacher could be announced at Alfa Romeo this weekend, potentially replacing Antonio Giovinazzi. What do you think to this story? For me, I'd like to see him kind of confirm, well, not confirm, you know, it's still very much a fight on his hands, but I'd like to see him win that F2 title and then get the seat, rather than kind of having this early coronation, because you know he's going to be in the car, and you know, it's at his home race.
Yeah, I don't know where that story came from. We didn't run it because it just doesn't have legs, you know. I mean, maybe we're wrong and we missed it, but it just doesn't make sense from a marketing perspective, from a season disruption perspective, from a freaking out his teammates perspective, to announce it now. So if they do, then they're really stupid. Like, they're really stupid. So I have my doubts. But it was never a doubt that Mick was going to be a Formula One driver at some point if he continued on the trajectory that he had. You know, and I need to point out a couple of things about Mick. First of all, he's a very, very nice, cool, well-spoken kid. I have met him. And on top of that, he's a very good racing driver. He might not be instantly fantastic, you know, like instantly, like boom, on it, especially in his younger years. Formula 3, he arrived the first season, unspectacular. Second season, he got better and better and better, and then you couldn't touch him and he won the championship. Formula 2, same thing. Last year, not fantastic, but he was thereabouts. And this season, apart from some silly mishaps like the fire extinguisher going off in the car and all that, he's just growing in stature, and now he's on the cusp of the championship. So even if he doesn't win this championship, I would put him in the car for next season. First of all, he's Mick's Schumacher, he's Michael's son. So, and secondly, as my memory serves me and tells me, that Michael was great when he was young, but he wasn't the next best fantastic thing. Michael grew into it. When he got to Formula One, he immediately seized the moment of Jordan at Spa, and that was fantastic. Whereas with Mick, it's been a slow development, it's keeping him out of the limelight. It's a totally different kettle of fish. So I think the kid's ready, and he deserves to drive at Alfa Romeo next year.
I think you raised some really good points there. The thing that's impressed me about Mick Schumacher is that he seems like a fast learner. And as you say, it's been a process of him adapting and kind of learning the car, learning the series. And then, as you say, second half of this season, he's been on fire, and he's been incredibly impressive. And I think that potentially the fact that he did have a lot of bad luck at the start of the season means that, you know, maybe his lead could be even larger than it currently is. But he's definitely like his father in that sense, that I think he works incredibly hard. He's not someone who's kind of leaving anything to chance. And I think the progression that he's shown both in his F3 championship winning year and this season as well shows that he's someone who isn't standing still. He's always looking to go forward. And that's an incredibly promising attribute for a young driver to have, and someone who's looking to get into Formula One. I think also just the fact that he's handled the pressure and how calm he is just a really impressive trait. Obviously, you know, when it comes to getting on the track, it's all about having that speed. But I still think that has been impressive. You look at his reaction after winning his first feature race at Monza, obviously the home race of Ferrari, and he doesn't seem like overawed by anything. He seems very calm, very focused on what he's got to do. And as I say, you know, without the speed, none of that means anything. But that is nonetheless an impressive character trait. And I think like you, I think he's ready. I think he should earn that seat. And I would be surprised now if he doesn't go on to win that championship. But I think it's best to wait till the end of the season. You know, let him have his moment of glory. Let him be the Formula 2 champion and then announce him. You know, you've still got to make a decision about who you want to get rid of. You've got Ilott and Schwartzman as well there. So potentially looking to move three drivers up if they're top three in F2. So, you know, that will earn all of them a super license. So I just don't think they should jump the gun. I think they should wait it out and just allow kind of everything to play out. So kind of back with a Formula One focus, I suppose. This is the first, well, obviously we have had Mugello, but this is kind of the real start of the kind of slightly unusual Formula One tracks that we're going to kind of end the season with, at least until we go to Bahrain and then Abu Dhabi. So following the German Grand Prix, the Eiffel Grand Prix at the Nürburgring, we've got the Portuguese Grand Prix at Portimão. We're going to Imola then for Emilia Romagna Grand Prix, sorry about that butchered pronunciation, and then the Turkish Grand Prix. Paul, do you think that just going to some of these older tracks that potentially haven't had these kind of F1 cars run at them before, do you think that will throw up any surprises?
I think Mugello was the sort of, what do we can we call it, the surprise. The crash test dummy. You know, did it work? And actually, it did work, but there were a lot of crashes. So, yeah, I think. It will. I think it will spice it up. I think I love the idea that we're going to these circuits because they're all pretty iconic circuits and deserve to have Formula One at some point. And I like the fact that this is happening. And, you know, it might never happen again. But, I think it definitely throws up some different scenarios because I think the current traditional 20 races, whatever, a lot of them on the Tilke-made tracks, you know, like five or six of them or whatever. And, you know, it's they're very predictable and they're made for Formula One. So the curbs and all that. Whereas, you know, this new batch of tracks, I think some of them haven't been updated for a while. And I think, yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting adventure.
My fear is that, you know, we could have a race at the Nürburgring this weekend. And we know all the problems that these current generation of cars have following. And then the even bigger problems they have overtaking. And my fear is that everyone's going to kind of write it off and say, oh, you know, Formula One's outgrown it. It's not suited. And then potentially that will limit our chances that we have coming back potentially in 2022 with a new generation of cars that are better able to follow and can overtake more easily. So I do think that the big issue with Formula One at the moment isn't necessarily the tracks. I do think it is very much just because they're just so fast. They've got so much downforce that following is so difficult. And something I've noticed, it seems even worse this season than it was last. It's just the kind of gaps that these cars are needing to maintain just to be able to run without overheating, because, you know, as soon as they get in that dirty air behind, they're just unable to race at full speed. So I do worry that potentially this generation of cars will kind of make a mockery of some of these circuits, and I think that would be a real shame because they are great racing tracks. And I think that it's a misstep in the way that the development of these cars, rather than these tracks being kind of out of date.
I've been following Formula One forever. And I can tell you one thing. I've never, ever heard a Formula One driver, or any racing driver for that matter, honestly, in any single-seater with wings, who's come to us and said, hey, mate, following that car was amazing. It was absolutely brilliant. You know, that's what the problem is. You've got wings. You've got ground effects. What do you think happened in the ground effects days when those things were cannoning like jets of air to the back? You couldn't even follow. You know, so it's you've got two, three, 10, 20 fast things on the same piece of tarmac. They create air. You know, the faster they go, the more turbulence they create. So I don't know why this is even an issue, honestly. It's just like, make cars that can overtake. First of all, do we need cars that are as long as boats? I mean, these are like buses. These things, compared to the cars of the 2000s, you don't even have to go far back. They're like so long. I mean, the longer the car, the longer the vehicle, you can't turn it. So make them shorter, make them racier, get rid of all the wings and flicklets, and just get, you know, I don't say get rid of the technology, but do we need so many winglet things that cost I don't know how much? Keep it simple, keep it cool. And I think that's the fundamental problem with Formula One, is it's just got too complicated.
I remember listening to an interview with Gordon Murray, and you know, he actually was complaining about how kind of prescriptive the regulations are these days. But I think that is a problem with the way that technologies advance. We can't have this kind of blank check style regulations, because then it doesn't benefit the show, because you know everything has been kind of analyzed and assessed to the nth degree, and everyone knows the fastest way to do certain things. So you know, you need to put a limit on what can be done in order to have cars that can kind of race with each other. But yeah, I definitely would support the idea of making the cars smaller, because I think that just pure size comes into it at some point. And you know, if a car's taking up half the track, and you know, it is so long that it's gonna, you know, take, you know, X amount more tracks for you to get past them, then that's obviously just gonna impact the racing. So I definitely think that's something I'd like to see. But obviously, this is kind of a discussion for another day. Let's just hope that it doesn't kind of impact the show at the Eiffel Grand Prix this weekend, which I'm sure, you know, despite the kind of reservations we have had in this discussion, you know, we're still very excited for. But Paul, before I let you go, let's just have a prediction for you. Who do you think is getting pole position, and what's your podium?
The obvious choice is to go Lewis. Pole wins in Germany, world record matches Michael. That would be the smart money. With Valtteri obviously wingmaning it, and then third I'd put Max, obviously. But I'm gonna say Max, Perez, Hamilton, just to be, you know, take a chance.
Interesting. I think that this is all about whether it rains or not. And obviously the thing is, even if it does rain, Hamilton is brilliant. But I think either way, I'm gonna go for Lewis Hamilton on pole. But I do have a feeling that Max Verstappen is probably due a win. He's been driving so well this season. So I'm going to go for a Max Verstappen win, Hamilton second place, and I'm going to go for Bottas in third.
No, that's, I think it's going to be a good weekend. I think, you know, I always look forward to Formula One. Formula One's never been exciting. It's always been boring, but I love it. So there you go.
Yeah, just think how much we'd love it if it was actually exciting every week.
Yeah, exactly.
I think so. Such a thing as too much of a good thing. But thank you to everyone for listening. We've had an unbelievable response recently, so please do, if you want to get in touch with the show, email us at podcast@grandprix247.com. check out all the great work that Paul and Ben and Sam have been doing over on the website at grandprix247.com, and also you can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. That's just at grandprix247. We'll be back on probably Monday to review the Eiffel Grand Prix. So thanks very much for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.